Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Schizzi!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Well, friends, as you know, if you're a longtime Film Sociology listener, sometimes the show turns into stage sociology because theater gets in the way of things in a good way. And I think we're going to have one of those days, especially it's the weekend before Halloween. But I brought a fellow IFJA member, Lou Harry, and another jerk of all trades, playwright, director, writer, author, critic. He's here. Hi, Lou and Lou.
Must get that jerk of all trades on my business card.
It's on mine. It's actually above the title. It's actually above the name. So, you have a show that's going on very soon, over the weekend, and then following.
Yeah, 2 weekends, and it's rooted in movies, so it makes sense.
We connect everything.
It's a play called Popular Monsters, and it sort of the world of it is inspired by. I grew up reading Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine.
Who wrote those things?
Forrest Ackerman,
really,
was the man.
Okay,
filled with terrible puns and lots of black and white images of our friends Frankenstein's monster, the Wolfman, Dracula.
Thank you for saying he's the monster, not the.
Oh, and that
we're
point.
One of the first pieces of pop culture debaggery I taught my daughter was that
it's not the monster, and that is referenced in the play. So I grew up with those magazines and loving those movies. Not so much that they were scary to me, but they were this whole world of interesting characters. And that sort of fueled the creation of this play, which is set in the office of a horror movie magazine, Popular Monsters, at the time when the movie Halloween is just about to be released.
So 1978.
The character in it is just heading to a screening of it. But it's also, if you think about that time, that's also the time when the VCR was just hitting. And
this would prove to be a major game changer.
Major game changer, especially when it comes to horror films. How we view films. What order things come. I mean, I grew up loving these movies, but in order to watch them, I needed to get TV Guide, if you remember TV Guide.
Oh, yeah.
And get it every week and go through every day and circle when these movies were going to appear.
And then depending on how your parents felt about what you were circling.
Right. Well, my mother kind of kept out of it because most of the stuff was on like Friday night at 11:30 or Saturday morning at 10.
Yep.
Right after the sermonette, which was interesting. But you know, I'd come home from wherever and I'd go to my room and I'd watch, you know, wow, what's on the Taste the Blood of Dracula. Well, I never saw that. I'm going to watch that. Or Ghost of Frankenstein or one of these. And while the play is not about my experience with them, I was sort of fascinated by that world. What happens when sort of old school horror is going out? Mm-hmm. There's kind of a new crop coming in, and it's set in this horror movie magazine that's kind of going down. One of the main characters in it is an actor from that generation of Lugosi, Chaney Jr.,
Basil
Karloff.
Rathbone.
Right. This is Ephraim Knight, who was a creation.
Wow. Very nice.
Who played the Beast.
This guy's starring in primetime soap operas in the 80s.
Almost. He did a couple of Love American Styles. He's been a game show person. He was up for the part in Halloween, but Donald Pleasance, who also beat him out as a James Bond villain, beat him out.
Oh,
in this.
This is the Karloff to his Lugosi.
Right. So there's a whole universe that we tried to create as kind of a backstory for this, what turns out to be kind of an oddly intimate family story.
And playing that actor to my left, which has nothing to do with radio, is Jamie McNulty. How are you, Jamie?
I'm well. Thank you for having me, Matt.
Well, full disclosure, Jamie and I have worked together many moons ago at Scottish Rite, so it's always fun to see you. And he's
and I
also
still came back.
You still came. Oh, thank you. I'm not going to talk about that. He's also part of a very special brethren. He's played Titus Andronicus. Everybody has. Lots of people can say they've done Shakespeare. Not everybody can say they've done Titus, so good to have.
It was a great show.
And you both have been Van Helsing.
Yeah, when did you play Van Helsing?
Years ago. This would have been in the late 80s.
You were young. God, what were you, Van Helsing MD?
Lots of gray makeup.
Just,
sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, thank you, Lou, for shameless plugging my shameless plug. Yeah, Richmond Civic Theater. If you're listening to this on Saturday, thank you. But that's when you should be listening. But yeah, Richmond Civic Theater's production of Dracula is tonight at 7:30 p.m. and 2 o'clock on Sunday. You can go to gorct.org for tickets. And yeah, I'm playing the most disheveled-looking Professor Van Helsing in recent memory.
Hey, who has time to pack? Who has time?
Well,
he's on the move.
I talked my director. I was like, she wanted me to get a Van Dyke, and I'm like, no, I don't feel like shaving. One, because
I thought you meant a bad Cockney accent.
Thank you. No. The bad Dutch is already working on the stage, but no, she
it was
wanted
a tough one.
She wanted the proper facial hair, and part of it was I'm saving myself for another production, And two, I brought up the fact that in Van Helsing's case, and by the way, I didn't read the novel before time because I was directing a show beforehand. That's another story for another time. But here's a guy whose son is dead. His wife is institutionalized. So this is not in the Stephen Dietz adaptation, and it doesn't matter. But here's a guy who is brilliant at what he does, but he's also kind of an outcast because he's practicing. He's been studying the dark arts and all this other stuff. So between that and his wife institutionalized and he won't divorce her, he's let himself go. And if you've seen me on the street, he's let himself go. I look at it as a redemption story for Van Helsing. He's finally getting his chance to practice what he's been practicing, what he's been studying. Mm-hmm. I think of it, it's like Bernard Goetz being in a subway for days and days just waiting for somebody to approach him. Only funnier, better.
But Van Helsing, I think, you know, there's one approach that he's like the guy who really knows everything, but also the guy who isn't believed. I mean, that he's
right.
That he is on the fringe of this. He should be kind of.
And by the way, I'm not really giving up. So I have the younger people do the heavy work. So I'm the George Peppard. I'm the Transylvanian A team. I just tell people to go do stuff. So
although Transylvanian A team may have been a bad like 80s horror comedy.
Don't tell Liam Neeson that. but the other great thing about and when we talk about this many of the iconic characters is that everybody has their own image of Dracula and Renfield and Van Helsing, and I have not
it is kind of frustrating as an actor because I don't want to watch these films. I will once the 29th happens, although I did show Ian Kinder, who plays our Seward. He had never seen Blackula, and I'm a big Blackula fan, so I showed him that and Scream Blackula Scream. There's also a group of guys in Richmond that when I'm not working on Thursdays, they will watch movies and they'll go have lunch. And we watched Werner Herzog's Nosferatu. And I still think Klaus Kinski is scarier than Dracula, but that's another thing for another time. But anyway, everybody has their own image of these characters.
Right.
And so the challenge, and I think that what's been fun, is finding your own spin on it. I'm not Edward Von Sloan. I'm not Hugh Jackman, thank God.
Olivier.
I'm not Peter Cushing. Or, Olivier. That was the year of the, I think that was the year of bad accents for Sir Larry, between that and the jazz singer. So
was the Betsy around that time?
78.
Too? Yeah.
78. Well, you know, he was doing stuff for his family in the National Theater. So I guess thanks, Sir Larry.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, how old were you when you played Van Helsing?
I would have been 28 or 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you had the makeup?
Yeah, and I had this actual facial hair going on.
Well, you're lucky. See, mine never connects.
Yeah, I started late acting in theater. My first step on stage, I was 27 and hadn't really done anything before
that.
Wow,
and a year into it, you're big VH.
Yeah, a year or two, I was doing just 6-7 shows. I was designing shows, building shows, being on stage. I was doing just about everything that could be done besides lighting and costumes.
Thank you. And cool. Wow. And where did you do it?
This started in Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota, when I was working for the Mayo Clinic way back then.
See, there you go. And yeah, Jamie and I directed Jamie in Lend Me a Tenor, one of the faster actors working on that show, I might add. It was,
oh, thank you.
I tend to not raise my, I try not to raise my voice. And it was the part I was having the most difficult on, besides actor chemistry with some, was the encore. The encore wasn't fast enough, and I remember bellowing in the theater, faster. I felt like J.K. Simmons in Whiplash. I didn't, you know, I don't like feeling that way. So anyway. Yeah.
Well, part of the pleasure once when Jamie, not only did he give a terrific audition for for Popular Monsters, but also once I realized that he knew these characters,
right.
He knew the world that we were writing about. That was a big plus.
I did just about the same thing that Lou was talking about earlier. I would go through, not the TV guide, but just that day or that night, Friday night, Saturday nights. In Michigan, where I grew up, we had the Ghoul. Like, you guys had Sammy Terry
well,
here.
Well, yeah, mine
so
was...
We
my,
would all, I would all. I was there every weekend watching something.
When was the Ghoul on?
This would have been the 70s, 70s, late 70s.
Yeah, Philadelphia was Dr. Shock.
Right. I grew up in Flint, so I had Sir Graves Ghastly on Channel 2. And it was Saturday afternoons.
Oh, okay.
It's the backstory for people. Basically, a lot of these horror films of the period were just dumped in packages on TV stations.
And thus, Mystery Science Theater would later be born.
Exactly. Right. But,
and now it's Sven Gulli. I
love
still,
Sven Gulli.
You know, I still, he's, when he's on,
well,
I'm on. Yeah.
There was a period in the early 80s in Michigan where you had Sir Graves Ghastly, briefer, Sir Graves Ghastly got that in the early 80s. Then Elvira was syndicated, which is great when you're 11. then Sven Gulli was briefly syndicated. I've had Rich Coase on the show a couple of times, and he was syndicated in like Detroit, Boston, San Francisco for it. It felt longer, but it was only like about a year and a half.
Go ahead.
And then Channel 2, which aired Sir Graves Ghastly, for some reason they had a deal that at 1 a.m. they would show these two guys, Big John and Little Chuck, and they were out of Cleveland. I found out later, and they didn't dress. I mean, they did this kind of weird comedy sketches, and then they would show the old movies. Then on Channel 4, you had a guy who went by Count Scary, who was not on every. He was on like maybe every quarter. He would do so. It was a really good hotbed for local horror TV. And my freshman year at Ball State was Sammy Terry's final regular season. So instead of going out one night a week, I would actually stay in and watch Sammy.
And this is one of the things that's interesting is the evolution for these. If you think about what it was like for these actors who, when they were making these films, some of them were pretty serious about what they were doing. And then it sort of becomes, then, you know, Abbott and Costello meets everybody.
Yeah.
And then it becomes more of a show. And then it gets put in the context of these morning show, of these, you know, Saturday afternoon shows where there's this, you know, crazy, pun-filled context.
You know, somebody wrote on Spengulli's Facebook page, somebody had a gripe that they were showing, he was showing Abbott and Costello, saying it's not horror. I'm like, yeah, have you, and also the fact that a lot of kids were scared of the Spengulli look or the Sammy mm-hmm. Terry look, but yeah, we're like, you forget there's a bunch of puns when he's not doing the wicked laugh or any of that sort of thing. So
there is
a mixture of that.
There was a period in the evolution of this play, which I wrote over the course of about 8 years, a couple years back, and somewhere in a file there's a draft of this that was introduced by a Spengulli-like character who would pop up during scene changes, even when things got really human and serious and intense, and give this weird context to it. I couldn't make it work, and it didn't work, and it was a bad idea. But at one point, that was part of the game.
Where did you grow up, Lou?
I grew up in Wildwood, New Jersey, which, if you're on the map, is the first island north of Cape May, New Jersey, the southern tip of New Jersey.
Did you get Chiller Theater down there?
Out of New York? Was that out of New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, we picked up some New York occasionally once we got cable, but most of it was out. The broadcast was out of Philly.
Okay. My dad's side of the family's from Trenton.
Okay.
So they would ship me out to my grandmother's house in the early 80s, and it was one we never left when it got dark. You thought it was Transylvania. But I don't think we had the horror shows at that time. We did have wall-to-wall baseball. Mets, Yanks, the Phillies. Plus, TBS was already up and going with the Braves, and WGN was up and going with the Cubs. So you could get fat and watch baseball all day long.
The other thing interesting about that process, I mean, the way we got a chance to see things, if you grew up in the 1930s and you went to the movies and saw Frankenstein, then a couple years later you went and saw Bride of Frankenstein, and a couple years later you saw Son of Frankenstein.
Right.
Even though, I mean, the multi-year gaps in your experience, so sometimes the chronology isn't quite as tight. There are some leaps of logic. But also, you know, in my generation, we watch them on TV. So we might have seen Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein first, and then maybe encountered Son of Frankenstein, and then maybe saw Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. The order is, you know, didn't become optional again until the VCR, until the DVD.
I remember Channel 7 out of Detroit would have Abbott and Costello Theater on Sunday mornings. And there was a part of me, damn, they did that many?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did. And eventually you just rotate it and start it again
when you hit 30-foot Bride of Candy Rock, you start over again.
Right. So,
Abbott and Costello Beats Frankenstein was on this last weekend. I watched it with my 16-year-old daughter, and she never really we'd seen Abbott and Costello Meets the Mummy. And we'd had that and watched that many, many times, and she loved that. And said, oh, let's watch, of course, Spengulli's on, it's on, so.
Saturdays at 8 on MeTV.
Right.
And Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein was the one that, like, the local Lions Club in Wildwood for a Halloween party would show that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it was sort of the family-friendly version of all of this.
And that's her first encounter with the actual Bela Lugosi. I mean, she'd never, you know.
Really?
No, she'd never seen really anything with him.
Right. JV, I think you're like me where you have a list. You have a mental list. Hopefully not a physical list. You don't want to thrust
that. That's my son's job.
You don't want to thrust that on the kid. You got to see this. So, Emma's not – we hit that a little early, and I remember one Halloween we were at the house. She is now on bowl detail. She will also smack your wrist and tell you, one, that's my girl. But there was one night we just watched YouTube clips of old hosts. I'm like, here's New York. Here's the ghoul. Here's this, she's done with mummy movies, and she's done with Wolfman movies. She has all this taken care of. So I'm glad you're having. Have you shown her Ed Wood?
I believe she has not seen that. Okay. My son Gordon, he's going to IU for.
Go ahead,
film.
John Vickers, pay attention.
And he does have a list, several lists of
course he does.
Of what he's seen, what he needs to see, all by different genres, and it's amazing.
Charting a history for this fictional character that weaves in and out of these other guys, these other actors, these other films, was sort of part of the fun and the process of this, and that story comes out. The play Popular Monsters opens with Ephraim Knight being interviewed by a young guy, totally inexperienced journalist journalist in quotes, who fell into this magazine.
It's a straight version of Gods and Monsters.
In a way. Well, it goes in a lot of other directions. Well, yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's some of that.
Film nerd called it.
Right. There's elements of that. But he is being interviewed by this worshipful kid who got this job at this horror movie magazine. And so we start to get not just Knight's history, but also his attitudes and his what he's made and what he hasn't. I mean, he's done, you know, there's a reference later in the play to a beach party film he had to do in the
60s.
Oh, yes, the Creature Beach Party.
Yes. Why wouldn't you? Hi, Vincent.
Yes.
Or as Sammy Terry likes to call him, Vinny. Nobody calls him Vinny. That was me, 1998, Chicago Film Festival, and I got to interview Christopher Lee.
Okay.
And it was guy from Fangoria, another guy from something that was like Fangoria. Third and fourth guys, you could tell I think I was the most dashing of the group,
right?
And yeah, it was damn near the Chris Farley show.
Right.
I mean, it was.
Yeah. Well, part of the fun of this is watching Knight sort of know that this kid doesn't know what he's talking about, and know that he's been interviewed 17 times by this magazine.
It's like people coming up to me going, "I there's no blues on WFYI radio."
Right.
Really?
Right.
Okay.
But also knowing he's the only magazine that pays attention to this guy anymore.
Right.
So there's that piece of it too. There's a loss, you know, of fame and an attitude that gets really mixed in an interesting way in Jamie's performance.
Nice. So I would say, who did you study as far as this guy's character? We mentioned Mr. Price, Mr. Rathbone, probably to a certain degree.
It's I think a little bit of Vincent Price mixed with Bela Lugosi. I mean, the guy, he's kind of everywhere in the sense that he was the fourth or fifth on that list, you know, Karloff, Lugosi, Chaney.
So when House of Shadows happens, he didn't make the cut.
Right.
Carradine.
I mentioned really? John Carradine, and there's so many mentions and so many references
in this show.
That
dude had 6,000 credits.
You know, they used to drink together, he and Carradine.
That's right. Right down in a bar right down the street. And
he got in trouble with Peter Lorre. Yeah, there's lots of...
The references that Lou has written into this are phenomenally funny, and the point, it's a very, very well written show. And I love, because I grew up with all the love American style, the love boat, all those things.
And it was weird to see them pop up on those things every now and then. Because you, especially the horror guys, if you see them in a non horror environment.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Like Vincent Price had a cameo in an Elvis movie, for crying out loud, in The Trouble with Girls, the Chautauqua show. And I'm like, well, of course, you got to work.
Right.
Man's got to eat.
Right.
And what?
Game shows as well.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
By the taping five in a day, by the last one, things get a little.
I would say, what did you create the game show?
Oh, yeah.
Or what's
You've got to be kidding. Is the 6 years.
But he can't quite remember the name of the ventriloquist who operated the bar underneath. But shouldn't there have been a game show called You've Got to Be Kidding?
Is that your next Fringe show?
I'm tempted. There is some talk about that. See what life was like on the set of that show.
If you try to drink as much as the Match Game crew.
Oh, my God.
Part of what we have, I mean, and there's kind of a conflict of cultures, too, where he's there. But this young guy who interviews him is actually going to see the, you know, an advanced screening of Halloween. But afterwards, he also has a date to see Rocky Horror with this woman who's seriously into Rocky Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And this is early in the stage. And she and he come back to the office. So we get a young lady in a magenta costume as well.
Nice.
So there's a number of cultural clashes going on.
Guys dig costumes. We're terrible.
You're quoting lines from the show.
Really? Yeah, have you read this? Did you read for this?
Lou wants me to work on it someday, but we'll have a 4-hour lunch over that.
Ephraim Knight says something to the effect of about costumes.
Yeah, it's interesting.
We are so simple.
That you should not be afraid of any woman that dresses up.
Right.
I tend to bid couples who just got married. Not unless I'm doing the service, but I'm like, here's to a lifetime of costumes and role playing. it's a sound greet. Okay, so when are the dates and location? And we'll talk more about this.
Popular Monsters will be at Irvington Lodge in fabulous Irvington, which is the Halloween hub
of Central
Indiana. You want to get out there for all the festivities. There's going to be casket races and the big parade and all kinds of stuff going on in Irvington. October 24th, that would be October 24th through November 4th.
We've read underwritings that have that. You're like, oh. Which, and I've even corrected myself. Heartland Film Festival, which runs, started yesterday and runs through.
Whenever you're listening.
Right.
It either is running, it ran, it whatever. But October 24th through November 4th at Irvington Lodge, and it's being produced by Catalyst Repertory Theater.
Very good. All right, we'll get to these knuckleheads in a little bit, but I do want to... We didn't see anything new this week.
Go ahead.
We don't know if it's opening in Indy or not.
Well, there's
a couple things
that are in that haven't opened.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of the theater productions that are played in movie theaters.
National Theater Live.
National Theater
stuff.
Live,
yes.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
The Minor Warehouse production of Funny Girl, of all things, is hitting movie theaters this week. This was a huge hit production in London of a show that is... I believe it's probably the best-known Broadway musical that has never been revived on Broadway.
You're right.
You know? You think about...
Especially after the Hello Dolly, but I don't
Hello
think
Dolly
it's ever
was
been revived
a couple of times. Funny Girl has never been revived on Broadway.
Why?
That is a good question. And watching... I got a screener of this to watch it in advance of it appearing in movie theaters. I think there's a couple things. One, people assume that it's just because Barbara Streisand was so iconic in it.
She also has a death grip
on
it.
Movies, right? And there was only one other replacement for her full-time in the Broadway production.
And that was?
Blanking. Sorry, don't know.
Oh, Charlotte Blanking.
No,
yes.
No. It was not somebody who became a big name.
Okay, all right.
It wasn't like Hello, Dolly, which was played by everybody.
Correct.
So, you know, Streisand played it here, played it in London, did the movie, and that was kind of it. There's a couple of problems with it. I mean, there are great shows. Sheridan Smith, wisely, this production does not cast somebody in the Streisand mode. This is more of a Fanny Bryce
right.
mode. Not the sort of beanpole, you know, wiseacre. This is somebody whose insecurities are right out there. She's more of a spark plug.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really good. Once you get the mugging, there's a lot of mugging. But it comes from Fanny Bryce, not
as opposed to the actress.
Yeah, as opposed to the actress.
Right.
And the music's great, of course. The emotional stuff is there, but the second act isn't. I mean, Funny Girl is still about, oh, you should follow your love for Nicky Arnstein, even though he's a total jerk and gambler and doesn't care much about you. And mom
he's
giving
so
her the advice. Yeah, follow that guy. And it's hard to buy. It's hard to care about as much.
Especially nowadays.
You get to a point. Yeah, the comedy is funny, and you get to a point of waiting for the next number. It's great to see it again.
So it suffers from Into the Wood disease?
No, don't get me started on Into the Wood. Fight me now. That's like Sunday in the Park with George. Here's act one, and here's variations, and we're just going to twist it. This is just, it runs out of steam. We care about Fanny Bryce becoming a star. And making herself known and breaking through the mold of not being the standard gorgeous model Ziegfeld girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. And we get to Don't Rain on My Parade, and then it becomes this domestic drama that's less interesting.
I see.
But it's still worth seeing. I mean, you're probably never going to see Funny Girl on stage in a full production. They talked about it years ago with Lea Michele. They talked about it with, Debbie Gibson did a tour that was supposed to go to New York and closed after a month on the road.
Uh-huh.
So
is it a Fathom event?
That I can check in a moment.
All right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Hanging out with Jamie McNulty and Lou Harry, and he's still checking, so we're just going to move on.
You can go to funnygirlincinemas.com for information. Funnygirlincinemas.com. They're also they have a production of Art coming up, plus the London production of The King and I will be available.
Who's in Art? Do we know?
Melina's in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, man. I got to see Art in London with Patrick Duffy, Richard Thomas, an English actor. And then the next day, Duffy was on our tour of the National. And while everybody was going up and doing kind of group pictures, and I didn't want to bother him too much compared to them, so I just went up doing, saw you yesterday, nice work, and then went on my merry way. So.
I want to see the production of Art with Garfunkel.
Blakey, right?
Blakey, you're going to do that?
Okay. Shaw.
Godfrey.
Yeah.
Carney.
All right. Thank you. And he brings his cat Tonto with him. All right. New on Blu-ray. Oh, speaking of horrifying, Mamma Mia 2 is out.
Oh, no. Leave it alone.
No,
listen. Did you see it?
No.
It's basically
Cher was six when she had her daughter?
Right. Exactly. It doesn't matter. It's about... That thing is about just having a party with
a
your friends.
A sequel to a jukebox musical.
That only plays out the plot that was already completely described in the first movie. But it's so harmless and so okay.
Does Pierce sing more?
He sings a little bit.
Does he sing more than he does on SOS?
He didn't sing in SOS.
Yes, he did.
Well, he tried.
I'm
not willing to give him the credit.
No. I see. I have turned around on Pierce. The guys in Mamma Mia are an easy punchline.
Right. It's no worse than, I mean, to me, Les Miserables.
But you
singing,
don't. But you and but you don't turn down that gig.
Oh no!
You get a call from your agent going, all right, you get to do a movie with Meryl Streep. Cool. It's in Greece. Great. You got to sing. Wait, what?
Yeah.
But after doing two musicals last year, you know, if he can do it and have it immortalized on film, I could do it. So I'm with you, Pierce. So anyway.
It's a harmless piece of fluff.
That's fine.
Why not?
Sorry to Bother You, also on Blu-ray and DVD. Well, it's horrifying in a different way. Okay, there are also ones, and you've seen these, Lou, where it's a Blu-ray release, but we're like, I thought this was already on Blu-ray, or maybe you're just repackaging it. And so the original Creepshow. George Romero, Stephen King collaboration.
Yeah.
It should have been a home run. It was more like a stand-up double.
Those are interesting. The anthology movies are interesting to me.
It's like a multi-dish on a cooking show. You could really eliminate yourself, eliminate each other out.
Well, there's choices of – they either are – well, this one's not so great. Well, there's another one coming along. I'm not trapped in a movie I don't like.
Right.
But then there's also the sense of, well, that was good. Well, this one's eh.
So, and that's kind of Creepshow.
Note to myself, rewatch movie.
Oh, yeah, Stanley Donen's double feature.
George
Very
C.
good. Maximum Overdrive, which, again, I thought was already on Blu-ray, and it's directed by Stephen King. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Criterion has put out Brian De Palma's sisters.
Oh.
Margot Kidder. May she rest in peace. A journalist witnesses a brutal murder in a neighboring apartment, but the police do not believe that the crime took place. With the help of a private detective, she seeks out the truth.
All you have to say under any Brian De Palma film, Brian De Palma tries to be Hitchcock. Brian De Palma tries to be Hitchcock.
Wow. Not the original, but the 2013 remake of The Evil Dead.
Why bother?
Well, I just said that about Mamma Mia, so there's
And a shout out to Hans Kellner, my friend in Philadelphia, who I went to college with, who I went to see that at the old Butko, the original, Butko Goldman Theater, which was like an inch deep in some kind of liquid at the bottom of the theater.
I believe Rich Hall on Not Necessarily News called it Cinemuck.
Well, I never saw a man scream and cringe the way Hans Kellner did at Evil Dead, the original production.
I saw the original Evil Dead with my father, so I was 12, at Genesee Valley, the Genesee Valley Cinemas, the same theater, which I'm going to turn back to a little bit, where I saw Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the original Halloween. So so I was 5 when I saw Jaws. Now, I saw Jaws at a theater in Long Beach Island, New Jersey. Where you should see Jaws. My grandfather, who I thought was Ernest Hemingway minus the hole in the head, walked out of the movie, scared the hell out of me. Next day, we go to the beach, and my father, the caregiver, God love him, picks me up over his head, walks toward the water, hums 2 notes, scares the crap out of me. So that was 75.
Right.
I go see Halloween at an 8 p.m. screening on, the week of Halloween, if I remember the week of Halloween. But that was, and I'm doing it. I'm, watching it between my fingers. And that was the first time because I don't remember it from Jaws, but it was the first time I heard a mixture of screams and laughter. And I couldn't quite, I was 8. Mm-hmm. I couldn't quite comprehend why people were having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, did you guys have that as a kid, or
I'm just
fragile.
I'm a few years older, and so I saw Halloween by myself in a movie theater when it first came out.
Nice.
It was intense.
Yeah. It really was, because I think prior to that, unless you had been going to, I mean, there had been the evolution was started, and we started with Rosemary's Baby, then The Exorcist, and right. that ball started to roll. But I think. But I mean, prior to that, it was probably the Universal stuff that was on TV as far as seeing scary stuff, unless you were dragged to it by your parents.
Mm-hmm. The one odd one in the middle was Night of the Living Dead.
That's true. That's also 68. That's same year you have Rosemary's Baby and Night of the Living Dead.
But Night of the Living Dead had that sort of, I mean, Rosemary's Baby was intense and creepy, but it wasn't.
It was a studio film.
Right. It wasn't that
And
I don't recognize any of these actors, so anyone could get killed at any moment, which is part of the pleasure.
And Halloween has a little of that. I mean, Donald Pleasance is known, and Jamie was not really, but there was a little bit of that.
Right.
So, where'd you see Halloween, Jamie?
I saw it in theaters with a bunch of friends on a Friday night, probably a week or two, not an opening, but very soon after it came out. And I have a very difficult time getting scared in at a movie. I'm very technical. I look at things like, how did they do that, as opposed to, that's visceral, to me. When I was growing up, The Incredible Shrinking Man, I'm sure you remember that one.
Really?
I was watching that alone on a Saturday at 2, and I was going along great until the spider scene, and I'm an arachnophobe.
Okay.
And so I was probably, 6, 7, 8, 9, somewhere around that range, and I was the only one in the room, and I noped out of that room as soon as Emma, and I still have not seen the end of The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Which, to me, I did see the ending, and to me, that was I had a little different experience, but that was the first movie to me where I felt like I was oddly having some kind of spiritual conversation with a movie, because it really is it's an existential kind of movie. You know, at the end, the ending speech about the infinitely small eventually being the infinitely large. And
you say that, and a John Goodman-like producer mogul has like, that sounds kind of fruity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course.
What are you talking about, existential?
But it is. If you remember, not to spoil too much, but if you remember the ending, he survives the spider attack, and he sort of comes to accept where he is and his connection to the universe. I mean, it is a spiritual film.
I believe Svengoolie has showed The Incredible Shrinking Man. Would you watch it if Sven showed it?
Oh, sure. I was just saying, I want to see the end of it. It's just getting that time when it's on TV and getting to
Have you seen Arachnophobia?
I could not. There's two films in my life I cannot get through.
All right. Okay.
Eight-Legged Freaks? So,
nobody should watch that. I'm sorry. Anybody who elects... He was not the sheriff. He was the hero. Anything with David Arquette is a hero. That's fine.
Well, now, like in Lord of the Rings, when Shelob comes out, I had no problem with that at all. I don't know why.
By the way, that film is still ending. okay, a couple other notes. New on DVD this week, new on Blu-ray, and you heard the interview last week. Shout Factory has reissued, I think this is his first time on Blu-ray, I'm not sure, but Get Shorty, but you can listen to my interview with the great Elmore Leonard on last week's program. The 1990 Night of the Living Dead is on Blu-ray for some reason, because they can. So there's that. All right, moving to the drive-in. I love Indiana. We have drive-ins open in October.
Yeah.
So this is pretty good. Screen One, and this is at the Tibbs. Actually, Jamie, do you remember the last drive-in experience you've had?
The last one I remember going.
Uh-huh.
That's about it.
Wow, fun time.
Yeah, no, I don't recall that it was a double feature. I was there with a nice young lady
Honest virtue.
Right, of course. And whether there was something happening on the screen, I could not tell you.
I saw Friday the 13th, the first one, first release in a crowded car, and did not particularly enjoy it. But more memorable was taking a date to the drive-in, but not actually having the money for the drive-in, so we parked outside of the drive-in
and watched
Cujo without sound.
Oh my God! That's why.
That was pretty sad.
That's good. All right, at the Tibbs Drive-In in
without sound.
My first experience was Saturday Night Fever.
At the drive-in.
With my family. Yeah, I remember.
With the family. Yes. Wait, was it the edited down PG version, or was it the full?
Fakers!
Pretty sure that was it.
Okay, I guess you could do that. Screen One at the Tibbs, the new reboot of Halloween and Venom. There you go. Screen Two, The Hate U Give and Bad Times at the El Royale. Sure. Screen Three, Night School and Halloween.
Okay. Sending Halloween over to the other screen.
Oh, my goodness. Screen Four, Goosebumps 2, and A Star is Born. So you
because,
want the kids to fall asleep.
You know, when you go to Amazon and it says, if you loved Goosebumps 2,
you'll love A Star is Born. I was like, same studio? I always try to link these. Same
probably.
Studio, or one for him, one for her, one for the kids, one for the grown-ups. Right. Anyway, thank you, Tibbs. Over at the Skyline in Shelbyville. Oh, here we go.
Is
this 27? Yeah. 8 o'clock, the original Halloween, 1978. Mm-hmm. 10 o'clock, the 2018 reboot of Halloween. 11:45, 1987's A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. Oh. Or as they have accidentally here, N-I-U-G-H-T, Mare, a Nightmare on Elm Street.
One of these things is not like the other.
Wow. So, well, and I have to give the Skyline credit because they do show older titles. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, unheard of.
I give any drive-in credit for existing. It's a beautiful
that's
thing.
Actually true. So, all right. So that is happening over there over at IU. Again, if you're listening on Saturday, thank you, at 4 o'clock, they are showing.
Is this the drive-in or at IU Cinema?
IU Cinema. Okay. IU Cinema. At 4 o'clock.
If you drive in there, you're going to do damage to
you'll
the walls.
Get, and you'll get parking tickets right, from yeah. IU. You don't want that. The Hitchhiker and Twilight Zone The Mask from 1953 and 1964. I believe it's television on film. 7 o'clock, Blue on My Mind from the International Art House series. Sunday the 28th at 1 o'clock, the 1931 Frankenstein.
There we go.
If you get a chance to see that on the big screen, please do.
If you can see that or Bride or Son on the big screen.
Blue My Mind is at 4 o'clock. Monday the 29th. From 1938, as a part of the East Asian film horror series, The Ghost Cat and the Mysterious Shamisen. Wow. Thursday, November 1st at 7 o'clock, Coco.
Deals with the undead and the dead.
That is cool. Saturday, November. Now, I don't believe these are double features. If it's not two, you have to two shows, two
other.
Prices pay. But this could be a double bill. And I love the double bills because they are so not related, even less related than the drive-in pairings.
Okay, here we go.
Saturday, November.
Let me pause for that for a second. Every year, as a tradition, my wife and I, on our anniversary, we don't buy gifts for each other. We go to a double feature. We go to one movie and we sneak to another. I'm confessing to you.
We don't, here at Film Sociology, we don't condone such
behavior. I know, but it's an anniversary thing. You got to respect that.
He also wears a sign that says, not Lou Harry.
Right. The oddest pairing we ever had was going to see There's Something About Mary and Saving Private Ryan as a double feature.
In that order. You know, and you've been to those. We've had some press screenings for award considerations, and the ones I always remember. We had a single man, right. the Tom Ford, a single man, and then Nine, and then we had The Lovely Bones. Right. And then Up in the Air.
Right.
And thank God you didn't flip both of those because you just go home. Same thing with Ryan. I think you would just, I don't want to watch Hair Gel. Let's just go home.
Let's go home.
All right. Saturday, November 3rd. Here we go. 4 o'clock. Goldfinger.
Mm-hmm. My son is ushering at that.
You what?
My son is ushering that in IU Cinema.
Very good. Very good. And 7 o'clock, the documentary Love, Gilda.
Oh, and with Goldberg, it's just a matter of time before somebody decides to make a James Bond stage musical. Please don't. Every other movie.
What if John Barry's involved?
No,
or the family of John Barry is involved?
Every other movie is being turned into a stage production. Let's not do that.
Here we go.
I see From Russia with Love, I think. That would be.
From Russia with Love, exclamation point.
Right.
Siberia.
That's, You Only Live Twice is the Roald Dahl script. Sorry. Sunday, November 4th at 1 o'clock, The Sting.
Great movie.
Great movie. Should be seen on a big screen.
Which has been turned into a stage musical, which is making the rounds with Harry Connick Jr. They're trying to make it happen.
As long as it doesn't have boxing Mac Davis, I'm really okay with that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sting 2 reference. Yes.
Awful. So 1 o'clock, The Sting. 4 o'clock, National Theater Live's King Lear.
Whoa.
With Sir Ian McKellen.
Sir Ian.
There's a double right there. There's a double feature. Go to that. Get your homework done in the morning and go see that. Monday.
You get your Lear references in Popular Monsters, too. Just telling you, we're packed with stuff.
This show, your pledge dollars at work. Monday, November 5th, my daughter's birthday, just added at 7 o'clock as a part of the International Art House series, the 2018 documentary Monrovia, Indiana.
There you go. Just saw that at one of the film festivals.
Yep.
It's going into that, just FYI, it's low-key. It doesn't tell you at all how to think. It does not have a very specific agenda of you're supposed to leave thinking this way about this. It's a low-key, really interesting documentary.
There you go. Thursday, November 8th, because he is scheduled to be there for several days, filmmaker Michael Schultz, So on Thursday, November 8th at 7 o'clock, I'm really excited about this, and it's an underappreciated film from 1975, Cooley High.
Oh, very good.
It is more than just the black American graffiti.
Right.
It's a wonderful slice of life with Glenn Turman, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, Garrett Morris as a teacher. Michael Schultz will be speaking Friday, November 9th. At 7 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock, his 1985 film, Crush Groove.
There you go.
Yes, when they were there was a part of it, the fact that rap music was being immortalized on film. So it's not a fad. Sorry. It's been over 30 years. It's not. So, but that was one of those. And this was a little bit more than Break-In or Beat Street or anything involving the Fat Boys. Saturday, November 10th at 4, another great double feature at 4 o'clock. And I just watched this on Blu-ray, and it's a lot of fun. Michael Schultz's film Car Wash.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His
Which also
Altman
was turned
S.
into a stage musical.
No way.
Did they
yep,
really?
They did.
Any good?
Didn't see it.
Probably
didn't see
well,
it. Well, they were trying to make
I was
it work.
Community I don't know theaters if, aren't doing it, so probably.
No, I don't know if it ever got a full production, but it was in development as a serious, like, using music from the period.
And this was a film. I love when they talk about Universal to put this out. And you always hear the stories of the small budget films, especially in blockbuster mode, where the films that are kind of left alone. And apparently, you know, all focus for Universal was Jaws, so they left Car Wash alone. Mm-hmm. So, and it's kind of an Altman-esque day in the life of a Los Angeles car wash. Really, really fun performances from everybody. This was something, it was one of the first things I recorded off of Betamax.
Wow.
And kept. And so the TV version, and by the way, the great about the restored theater version is that you get more Antonio Fargas. Apparently, NBC doesn't like gay people in the 70s because his role was eliminated.
Oh, interesting.
And replaced with, and it's not in a theatrical release, scenes with Danny DeVito and Brooke Adams as a married couple who own a hot dog stand next to the car wash. Yeah, I know.
Well, nope. Is it you want Brooke Adams, you'll settle for Karen Allen, you get Margot Kidder, or is it the other way around?
Moving on. So here's your double feature. 4 o'clock, car wash. 7 o'clock, There Will Be Blood.
No, wow. No, no.
And probably see it in that order.
You know what? I'd rather see Car Wash. To me, There Will Be Blood is one of the most overrated films of the past 20 years.
Oh, come on. Hmm. Yep. Sunday, November 11th. Now we're really looking ahead. The architect, Ames, the architect and painter, Takata for Toy Trains. That's at 1 o'clock. And then at 4 o'clock from 1950, Outrage. 1950 there. So anyway, that is all happening at IU. So mark your calendars.
Thank you, IU.
This is the final weekend of the Midnight Movie Series at Keystone Arts. And Midnight Movies are a lost art. So the fact that, and we'll get, I want to get to that in a second. Of course, tonight is the last night, if you're listening on Saturday, the 30th anniversary 4K digital restoration of Tim Burton's Beetlejuice.
So that's, which is now being done on stage in Washington, D.C., and has a New York Broadway production set.
Well, there you go. Hopefully you know? You'll go longer than The Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah. Never made it to New York, Witches of Eastwick. Only London.
It was in London on our honeymoon. We chose not to see it.
I have to put in a plug for another adaptation
yes.
of a movie that became a stage musical, The Band's Visit.
Oh,
yes. Israeli
yeah.
film. I just saw it for the
you
second
know what?
Time in New York.
Because the mall crowd hasn't seen that one.
Right, that's... Stunning musical. I mean, absolutely one of the best. Low-key, beautiful. If you ever see the original film, the star of that film, who's an Israeli Best Actor winner, is now in the Broadway production, took over for Tony Shalhoub.
Nice.
So
very good.
It's outstanding.
Saturday, November 3rd, if you are not seeing Dracula, if you are not in Indianapolis, at the Goddard Auditorium at Carpenter Hall, on the beautiful campus of Earlham College, as part of the Earlham Artists and Lecture Series, The Flophouse. Now, I'm reading from the website. Don't judge me. The Flophouse podcast is friends who've decided to express that friendship not by doing productive or enjoyable things, but instead by watching critical or commercial flops and discussing those terrible movies for you to enjoy in your ear holes. Not all flops are terrible. Dan McCoy. He's an Earlham grad of 2000, is an Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and is currently a writer for The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Elliot Kalan is an Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and the head writer for Mystery Science Theater 3000 The Return, which is coming soon on Netflix, among other projects. And Stuart Wellington, class of 02, owns Hinterland's Bar in Brooklyn and was once called equally funny by the Onion AV Club. So that is happening at Earlham College, Saturday the 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at Goddard Auditorium.
Is that a touring show?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. So, yeah, check out the Flophouse podcast and come meet the guys at Earlham. There's plenty to do in Richmond. Trust me on this one. And finally, not really finally because we still have about 10 minutes, Sammy Terry, if you're listening to the 27th, we've already – Saturday's the 27th? No, it's Friday. The 29th.
Pesky days.
I know. Working ahead. Sammy Terry hosts at ISU Performing Arts Series in Terre Haute at 6 o'clock, a stage version of Frankenstein. That's happening there. And then, of course, on Wednesday the 31st, on Halloween night, Sammy Terry birthday celebration, you can watch Sammy Terry live on Facebook, or you can go to SammyTerry.com for all the good information there. So,
you got choices.
You have plenty to do in our fair city and
get
fair state.
Get away from the TV for a little bit. A
little bit. So, in the shameless plug department, Saturday, tonight at 7:30 p.m., tomorrow at 2 p.m. at Richmond Civic Theater, gorct.org for more tickets and info. And you can see Dracula. I'm playing Van Helsing. Yeah, this is how I look. And plug your show, Lou.
Popular Monsters by Lou Harry is being staged by Catalyst Repertory Theater at the fabulous Irvington Lodge in Irvington, surrounded by all kinds of Halloween activities. It runs October 24th through November 4th. Tickets are only $15. Check out Catalyst Rep or Popular Monsters at brownpapertickets.com. Four tickets. We hope to see you there.
And you can see Jamie out drink and out act Jonathan Harris. Harris is really lower on the list. So, you mentioned somebody's staging Rocky Horror. Is that
The
Athenaeum?
At the Athenaeum. Zach and Zach, who do some fabulous local work. They did Rocky Horror show a couple years back. Amazing technical. They're terrific with their cast. This is a new cast primarily, but it's at the Athenaeum. I think they've already sold out a couple of performances, but you want to check out Rocky Horror at the Athenaeum. This is the Rocky Horror show, the live stage version.
They're not in front of a screen.
Not in front of a screen.
It's not the movie.
They incorporate some fabulous video stuff, but it's not the movie. It's not, there are bits of audience interaction. I'm sure you won't be begrudged if you do the time warp, but this isn't the full toast throwing.
Oh, yeah, not that experience.
But it's not that experience, but it's a live experience like it was, like Rocky Horror originally was.
And there was a group of Ball State students, I'm sorry, the Ball State University, a group of Ball State theater students did this at New Boswell Brewery in Richmond last weekend. They did two shows. So it's fun that is popping up. It's kind of not the goth kids, but kind of that version of the modern version of let's put on a show.
Right.
It's the Mickey and Judy thing. But
there's
Rocky
a whole other conversation to have about it in the Me Too world, too. Because, there's a lot of non-consensual activity going on there.
And there's also a lot of non-traditional casting nowadays, so that helps that mix.
And should also mention hit show Cabaret Poe over at the Phoenix Theater.
Beautiful show.
Q Artistry has come under the Phoenix Theater umbrella at their new building, so they are finding new audiences with a new production of, this will be the 10th year for Cabaret Poe.
Hey, Ben. Mentioning earlier, you talked about Halloween and the birth of the VCR, and I remember that the Onion, actually the AV Club, the great music, great entertainment writing the AV Club, but they talked about the day Rocky Horror became available on home video was the death of the midnight movie because of the birth of the VCR is kind of like what we were talking about with 68 and which year was really the death knell, but it talked about you could watch it anytime anywhere and I don't care how big your screen is, there is still, as Mrs. Sosie likes to say, the theater is a gathering place and that should never be forgotten, and it's still going to be better than your living room no matter how big your screen is. And so it's been hard to, so I love the fact that a place like the Music Box Theater in Chicago has midnight movies every weekend. Mm-hmm. The fact that here in Indy we at least have Keystone Arts doing it too, you know, in the summer and
the
in
drive-ins
October.
Are kind of the
drive-ins are still kind of there. Mm-hmm. The fact that we have, you know, we have some attempts of doing stage shows and some private screenings or public screenings of stuff, mm-hmm. but it's hard to recreate the midnight movie. And they championed The Room as the rebirth of the midnight movie.
I saw
movie.
That in St. Louis with my son Gordon. Yeah, just last year.
It was a communal experience.
It is a communal experience.
Actually, he was there.
Purdue University.
I have the famous 30-minute conversation with Mr. Rousseau on this program.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah, let me pick up this name I dropped.
no, I was going to say, a number of years ago, Purdue University decided to do a midnight performance of Hair.
Ooh.
Which was pretty amazing because by quarter after 2 in the morning, you felt like you were on hallucinogens. And
Did you see it?
I saw it. Wow. I went up there to see it. Drove by home at 4 in the morning. It was wonderful.
More of that, please. Yes. The second year of the Richmond Shakespeare Festival was the year we did Titus Andronicus, and we did our final performance on a Saturday night at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We called that Richmond Midnight. And when we get to, and by the way, Shakespeare's bloodiest play, look it up. Uh-huh. But we had a cauldron with stage blood. So instead of having squibs, people who were demons, because our director said it in Hell, it's an anti-passion play. Ours was. And, you know, you dip your hands in, and then you would just put it over the person's body, and that's how they died.
Oh, wow.
So when we get to the end, Lucius seems to be the last survivor. He's not. And all the dead people surround him, and Titus kisses his forehead and shoves his face into the bowl.
Oh, wow.
Now, that last performance we had, you know, we all had weapons. Because it was 10 o'clock, we had the option of using our prop weapons or toys that lit up, you know, kind of glow toys. Right. And also the fact that we bought too much stage blood. So normally the bowl was about 3/4 full. We saw it when we started on stage. It was full. Hmm. So when Kyle Zilek, love you, Kyle, when Kyle's face was shoved in, you saw a glut fall on both sides. And normally he would just raise his head above the bowl and scream. He decided instead to whip his hair back and Jackson Pollock all of us in that final moment. So, yes, more midnight theater would be good, or at least late night theater. Yeah. That's
and,
sort of thing.
And I want to, in 5 years from now,
yes.
I want to know that one or both of you have starred in a show that's about to go to Broadway. No, seriously, this is true. It's a show called Gary, a sequel to Titus Andronicus that's going to star Nathan Lane and Andrea Martin.
Oh, what?
My. It's about the cleanup crew.
Oh. How did you just pull that info up?
I remembered it, that the Titus thing was coming, and yeah, wanted to double check it, but yes.
Wait a minute.
I get
where
to play
is this?
The Andrea Martin
it's
part.
It's going to play.
You got the legs for it. Right. You mean.
It's by Taylor Mack.
You mean Black Christmas star Andrea Martin.
That's right. That's
going
right.
Back to your Canadian horror stuff, salute Bob Clark.
Gary, a sequel to Titus Andronicus is the title of it. Taylor Mack's play.
Who published it?
Not published. It's being performed on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I mean, Sam. I have to call Sam French?
No, not published yet. Right? It's not available yet. It's about to premiere.
Wow.
You had fun with Titus.
I did.
You had a good time.
It was great time. Yeah, working for those wonderful individuals. It wasn't just me. It's a lot of talent in that show.
Hi, Kelly. We can't listen to Take Me to Church the same way again. We use that during what we called Lavinia and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day.
Very, very
in fact,
bad
closing
day.
I gave Megan Cooper a cut. Not that Megan Cooper, our Megan Cooper, but I wrote out Lavinia and the Terrible, Horrible Night. Here comes Chiron and Demetrius. He's going to rape me and cut off my tongue and my hands. I don't want to be raped and have my tongue and cut off in my hands. I would rather be in Australia.
Nice.
So, all right, once again, plug your show. We got
Popular
about
1 Monsters.
Minute.
Popular Monsters is a play about horror movies and truth and what else? And
what are we scared
all kinds of?
Of
issues. What are we scared of? How do we reveal ourselves, and who do we reveal our true selves to? And
Truth and Lies.
Irvington Lodge on October 24th through 28th.
And you can go see Dracula at Richmond Civic Theater tonight at 7:30 p.m. and tomorrow at 2 p.m. Go to GoRCT.org for information. And, of course, Saturday the 3rd, the Flophouse happening at Earlham College at the Goddard Auditorium. You can go to earlham.edu for all the information on that. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good play or a decent movie. You deserve it. Lou, Jamie, thank you for hanging out.
Such a pleasure.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!